We're reading online with Swimming World that competitive swimming's in a crisis. What do you think? Is Wayne Goldsmith correct?
I have seen it for a long time, and a crisis is a strong word, I think, because everybody loves the water. Even those that don't swim are fascinated by the water. You know, if there's one view that maybe the consensus can agree on where you want to live or what you want to see when you wake up in the morning, and I think that's water. So I think everybody loves the water intuitively, and only maybe half the people get the privilege to learn how to swim, and the other half need that opportunity. If swimming is in crisis, then it's what we're doing in the water that's in crisis, not necessarily swimming. Define it as competitive swim racing in crisis. I don't think it's in crisis. It's out of balance. I would maybe look at it that way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Definitely about competitive swimming. You know, it's in Swimming World magazine, and, you know, they definitely focus on the racing stuff. He talks about a school teacher doesn't teach advanced calculus to an 11-year-old. You know, so you have to tailor your coaching and your swimmer development to appropriate ages.
Well, I think those are good points. If there's a high influence that I think saturates all of the aquatic community, and that is and I think that point is we want to push all kids to race. And I think that is what's out of balance. If you were to look at learn to swim lessons, say at a large franchise like Swim America, or if you go to the YMCA, or you even go to your local municipality, I think there's been, and I think brainwashing is too strong of a term, but I think there's been a strong influence on all of aquatics to have it all result in or end in racing. And I think that's the part that's out of balance. But not to blame racing at all. Racing is an amazing thing. And I compare it to track and field. I mean, track and field, I competed in track and field. I competed in competitive swimming at racing. I think they're great sports and they have their place. But I think every kid should experience both of those, but in harmony with experience interactive team sports games as well. And on land, that is what's been happening for 100 years, but it's not that way in the water. So I think that's where I think the opportunity lies in creating a new balance in the water is to create momentum for and swing the pendulum in the other direction and have more fun, engaging, almost addictive, if you want to use that word, interactive activities in the water that just bring the kids back and they just want to play. And I think play is really the key. Play is thought of in two different ways. It can be thought of as being very spontaneous, but then also you can have play and have it still engaging and fun and have it very organized. And I think on land, on whether you're in the field or on grassy field or on a sport court, I think the term play has been very established and very organized, and kids have a great time. And I think we've missed that over the last 50 years in the water. And so that's where I think the misbalance is everything's pointing to racing. And there's another anomaly there, Mark, in water that I think we should talk about right now is on land, kids learn the basic motor skills and running and coordination in the context of game play. Parents sign their kids up to play in an organized, structured way to learn socialization skills, to learn coordination, to get good cardiorespiratory exercise. The kids learn that from an early age, from about 4 or 5 on up, and the structure starts softly, gradually, and the structure gets more organized and more specific as the kids are able to comprehend that and focus on that and have the attention span for that and have the need for it. And to get back to your original question, we're getting real specific with the kids and very competitive with the kids in competitive swim racing at a very early age. And I think the play aspect has been missing. And the anomaly I'm speaking to is what's happening in the water is in reversal of what's happening on land. On land, the kids learn to play, and then it gets more specific, more scientific, more puristic, all the way up to racing. And it's typically the kids play first, and then they race. In the water, they kind of they learn and train for racing right away, and then some of those kids play water polo.
I agree that in a sense that when a kid is 10 or 11, they can really race and have that experience be quite similar to an Olympian. A great 10-year-old has beautiful stroke capacity, you know, in the water. Hmm. It looks like, you know, a shrunk down version of a superstar swimmer. You can be. It's not always, you know, if they've been training and practicing and have great coaching,
yep.
and, you know, they can look like a miniature Olympian. And those races mm-hmm. can be quite intense. Swimmers, you know, they are doing many of the same things that the top people in the sport do. Now, if you take a little 10-year-old or 11-year-old playing basketball, you know, they're not playing above the rim. You know, they're not, you know, playing football like the other guys play football. The playbook is way different. As a blessing, in a way, you know, swimming can make our little guys look old. But on the other hand, we make all of our little guys act old. The
balance, I think
you're right, that we need to need to play with little guys.
I think because you're a swim coach and have been for such a long time, you have the opportunity to see more of those 10-year-olds that actually can compete at that level. For myself, I'm not a swim racing coach, and so the vast majority of kids at 10 years old that I see and that come in to play swim with us look like the 10-year-old kid that's just sort of learning how to play, that has played some basketball, but not too much, or some football, but not too much, some baseball. No, he's there to engage and learn gradually. But what I see in the water in my swim classes is kids that are still primarily in the water, very recreational. They come through swim lessons, and I get kids at 10 years old that still can't swim. So they're a far cry from the technique you described, all the way to once in a while, I might get one out of 100 kids that maybe has what I would consider really good stroke technique. And so I'm not seeing those kids that you see it's really interesting, Mark, when you said to me that I see kids and kids can have stroke technique at 10 that emulate Olympic technique. I'm sure they exist, but I think they exist also in basketball and football and baseball. It's just how focused in are the parents really to get their kids at a real young age from age 5 and train them hard from age 5 to 10 for those 5 years, you know, and the kids have to somewhat cooperate with that. But a lot of it is really driven by the parents, I think. There are those kids out there, but really wanted that socialization and that fun aspect, and something that if I could play for a couple of months and then wanted to go do something else, I could come back and pretty much pick up where I left off, or at least have a fun game or a fun activity with friends, but not at a level that I felt like I can't come back in because I haven't been training at that point in time. So, yeah, it just depends on your perspective, I think. I've got a really strong perspective or background in a number of team sports games. And I think I mentioned to you once before that it was all the way back in high school when I was out in the ocean one day swimming around with my swim fins. And I said, well, why isn't there a game that has these elements, you know, just this beautiful water and this beautiful salt water and these swim fins that really are giving me such a gift of power and speed and safety, maneuverability, you know, and then equating that to all other sports games that have specialized footwear to make the game more exciting, not only for the players, but the spectators, to the point where the spectators really are driving the game and driving the activity now and the whole industry as opposed to the players. So it's just really, there's a lot of elements that I think aquatics can learn from what the grass field and the court have been doing for decades, and making advancements in commerce, making advancements in evolution of the activity, and it's the social implications of the activity. So
Wayne makes a point too, that the training and competition needs can change with the program from, you know, younger kids to older kids, you know, and that's one thing that I really want to see with swim over the future comes. You know, we play swim with the kids that can't even swim, But then as they get better and better at swimming, you know, the game elevates itself. And I think it's going to be a great opportunity to play swim with seasoned kids. We played with some camps where kids were really good swimmers. You know, they were there because they were year-round swimmers. And those kids enjoy swim. And there's a learning curve to the game. So maybe on the first day, they're not quite understanding about passing lanes and teamwork. But then as we play four or five or six times, the games get much better. So what do you think about this changing the structure of the play or the games, you know, especially how the swim adapts to various ages and abilities?
Yeah, I like your question because it really switches gears here in the conversation with regard to racing versus sports games and swim. And I want to, in the conversation, sort of relate the two things together. You know, again, coming back to the title or the name of the game, Swim, you know, it was first evolved because you swim and then you skim or skip or pass this disc to your teammates. And those words were put together. And so I think there's always going to be what I really love most about the evolution of Swim over the last 10 years is that it really has its heart in swimming, moving fast, and let's call that racing, but really equipping the players to have more fun and enjoyment doing that and have this socialization aspect in the game. You know, swimming as a competitive sport has your head primarily, other than you're taking a breath, the very fastest position is always with your head in the water. So swim sacrifices that for the sake of socialization, for the sake of team interaction, for the sake of another cause, and that is to work with your teammates to build strategies both in the water, both with what you're doing in the water and then also verbally and through eye contact. So that's the big element, probably the biggest element difference between swimming and swim is the interactive aspect of the game and the cooperative aspect of the game. Of versus racing, that whole concept. But swim still has in its foundation all those same elements as swimming, and that appeals to the kid that's just from just learning all the way up to that elite level. And to speak to your comments about swim at a higher level, the game picks up so much speed because of the use of the swim fins and because of the kids that say aren't blessed with speed can still be pretty fast with the fins, but the disc moves so much faster than you can move in the water that it's really about that interaction between the team that has more success and therefore say wins by score is typically the team that passes better. If both teams pass the same and have that same socialization and cooperation, then naturally the team that's faster in the water might have an advantage. But it's really just like basketball or just like baseball or football. If one team really has more experience in its communication skills and spirit and cooperation, that's the team with the edge. So and that relates so much more to life than just how fast you are. And then speaking back to Wayne's article, you know, he's talking about, you know, he said what was really shocking about his article is that he made this general statement that organized sports is dying. He, you know, he talked about swim racing, but he really got broad and said organized sports is dying. I hope I'm quoting him accurately there. And I think what he was speaking to is some of the real technical specific sports that we may push on our kids at too young of an age. Youth sports in America are still real strong, and there are still youth sports games are still growing. So I thought that was a strong statement, but I think also maybe because of his influence, you know, and he was speaking to swimming world, which is the racing world. I think there was a strong influence aspect to racing within the context of that statement that he had.
In Wayne's point three, he says there isn't a one-size-fits-all solution to the dropout phenomenon. Of course, he's talking about the significant dropout rate in competitive swimming. But, you know, I think we can make a good argument here that the one-size-fits-all solution is swim. I would love to see that swim be in the plug that helps with retention, and it helps stop, you know, curb the dropout rate, and it helps even to draw more to the competitive swimming world. So do you think the you know, is it fair to say that SQIM could be a one-size-fits-all solution? Your take.
That's a good point, Mark. I don't know if I define it quite that way. I think I'd define it like this. Because I almost always have to keep looking back to where the biggest success is in fitness and sport, and it's in the interactive team game. So in that regard, I totally agree with you. But we don't want to close the door on the help that SQIM could provide to racing and even to polo. And here's how. As far as the one size fits all, I think it is maybe definitely the foundational sport for aquatics, where kids can come in and interact and socialize in a setting that shows a lot of safety, ease for the parents and the child that's just learning how to swim, learn through real fun engagement, a way to become more safe in the water and socialize. In that regard, I think it could meet the need of a great majority of the population at that very young age, all the way through senior citizen, for that matter. But at the same time, I never want to lose sight on the fact that such a foundational game, like soccer, like football, like lacrosse, feeds into track and field. It's track and field coaches that are really looking for those gifted, fast athletes. Find those athletes in soccer, in football, in lacrosse, those kids that are gifted with speed. That's where they show up, because that's where the majority of the kids lean to. They lean to those sport games. I always like to tell the adage, if you have 20 kids and you take them outside on a nice warm summer day and you're on a grass field or on a sport court, doesn't matter, or on an asphalt, doesn't matter, and say, okay, we can run for 30 minutes or 20 minutes, or we can play a game. What are the kids going to want to do? You know, 19 out of 20 are going to say, dude, let's do this. You're one or two out of those 20 that are maybe gifted with speed are going to say, let's run the whole time. But the rest of those kids are going to want to interact. In that example, the game really is the one size fits all, and the swimming or the racing or the runner could be the accent. So if you take that to the water, yeah, I agree with what Wayne is saying, but at the same time, what will happen if we allow swimming the opportunity and to grow and have the investment made into SQIM, make more kids water competent, safer, smarter, stronger in the water, many, many, many more kids. And now racing and even polo have more kids to choose from, more kids interested going to that elite Olympic level. Not that SQIM won't go to that elite Olympic level either. I'm sure it will. But I think having SQIM as the foundation will build racing and make racing healthier and make polo healthier. Well, I think what will surprise most administrators and most facility operators is by making space and making room for SQIM and giving it a chance to grow and giving its due with regard to just exposure to your community, exposure to your family, and being on board with that, saying, yeah, we believe in this. That alone right there speaks volumes. What that will do is it will pick up the activity at your swim level. It may, at your facility, it may get more hectic. But what you really got to look at is what happens in those situations historically. And we can point to a couple different sport games that this has happened to. As you know, Nesmith back in, 1894 or 5, whenever it was, went into a gymnasium, which was at that time a gymnastics facility, and wanted to get more cardio respiratory work and coordination with his PE classes, and created the game of basketball. And they used the gymnastics facility to start that with. You know, put the old peach basket up on the wall, and eventually you're going to realize you got to cut the hole out of the bottom of that. Same thing for hockey. Hockey, you know, figure skating started before the team game did, and just being elegant on the ice. But in essence, it's the game that really keeps the ice rinks in the black, not figure skating. So And hockey is a really good one to look at because hockey is still growing in the United States. It's still expanding. Started in Canada, it's moved to Europe, and it's still growing and expanding in the U.S. And the ice rink is very similar to the aquatic facility with regard to cost, energy use, and overhead. And it's the sport game. It's a sport game of hockey that really generates the revenue there. So I think there's got to be a balance, and I think there's an opportunity for facilities, especially the expensive facilities, the indoor facilities in the northern part of the hemisphere or the far southern, you know, down under. When you get into those cold climates and you need that indoor facility, we all know the expense of that in the winter months. And so I think it's a game like swim that can be very space efficient, very time efficient. What's great about SQIM and as a balance with racing creates requires a lot of practice for a very short event, whereas SQIM, like soccer or basketball or hockey, can have a few short practices and get right into the games and have maybe one practice a week and one game or two practices and two games, but have as many games. I mean, look at baseball. They kind of warm up and play spring training, and then for the rest of the season, it's really all about the games. They have games practically every single day, whereas, you know, the dynamic of racing is you expend so much in such a little bit of time, you need time to recover. Where in the games, you can literally compete every single day. And so I would compare swimming or to track and field, where it's a short event, but where you expend everything that you have and then you've got to recover. Whereas in the interactive games like, you know, baseball or basketball, where you have multiple games a week, the same thing could work. It does work for SQIM in that the focus is really on the game activity. And it's that game activity that engages the kids, teaches healthy competition, but also brings in the revenue because now that draws the spectators. You've got more potential for ticket revenue, commerce, sponsorship, everything, because the game is really the interactive time of the game is so much more profound than the practice and takes up more time than the practice. So relating that to your time in the water and what's cost effective in the pool, as far as use of your time, the game is always going to be the more valuable aspect to the financial rewards to the facility than a practice is. So in that respect, I think SQIM could put a lot of aquatic facilities in the black just by being one of those pioneers and saying yes to SQIM, bring it in, invest in it, and just watch what rewards can happen.
Yeah, so I agree. Then SQIM can be a great solution to the overall aquatic programs as far as facilities, scheduling, and incomes, and visitors, and use, and participation among a greater percentage of people in the communities that these facilities serve. Hey, I really love this other sums line and from Wayne, and I think it ties directly to SQIM too. And it's the service approach, where he writes, "It's about listening to each and every swimmer in your team and working with them to develop effective solutions to the problems and challenges they are facing." You know, with a big stress on the listening and the big stress on the communications with, rather than, you know, talking to the swimmer, or the, you know, top-down approach where the coaches are telling us, you know, this is what has to happen. And there are times for those discussions, but, you know, what's really happening in the minds and hearts of the kids and with their families and such. And I think that listening part is something that we really try to stress with the teamwork and sportsmanship. So we play the game, and then we debrief, and we have times to say, hey, you know, who really, you know, shined today? Or, wow, wasn't that an interesting pass? Or what was the best play that you liked? Or, you know, how were you able to contribute with your team? So there's some open-ended questions that we like to, you know, have with the group, both teams at one time generally. And we get to sort of reflect on the game. And I think that's a nice part of SQIM, but it's also, you know, the interacting and communicating that's all really embedded within the game. I also love that, you know, there's a listening part. Now, on the other hand, we're sort of in our early stages, so kids aren't going to be coming to the coach and say, hey, let's play more swim when they've never played it before. They might be saying, hey, let's play sharks and minnows, or they might play let's have game time or let's do relays because they know that sort of strikes a favorable chord among, you know, game days. But if we could get more people interested in asking for swim, then we'll be able to have coaches say, okay, yeah, let's do that Sunday afternoon, or let's do that as a picnic activity, or let's do that occasionally, or bring a friend day, so that we can start plugging in a more regular basis some opportunities to play swim. And I think the kids will say, yeah, I really, really enjoy this, and I want to do this more. And not that it's going to overtake most swimming teams, but it's going to be a real good supplement to add. The listening component in there, I think it gives the student voice or the youth voice a little more focus in your program. So what do you say about the listening and communicating part?
Well, I totally agree, Mark. You hit a lot of good points there. The communication and the listening assumes that everybody's got something to contribute. And that really parallels what swim is. In racing, it's really all about the speed. Not much is going to be said for the person that comes in last to the wall and just say, well, I really, really liked his breathing technique, or I really liked his approach to the water with his hands. It's really about finishing fast and finishing first. So with regard to swim, there's just what swim does, which water polo does as well, is bring so many more elements and contribution aspects to the game and to team success. And so even if you might have one person on the swim team or the polo team that's really fast, and that contributed, that picked up the tempo of the game, and he got a breakaway score, or he got this, that. But then you're going to have the person really with that vision for the game and how the play evolves and recognizing which play to run. And the person that just has that stellar passing, and maybe they're not very fast in the water, but he's in the game the whole time. You never take him out because he's such a good passer. Or you've got that kid that's such the good defender that just takes so much pride and put so much energy saying nobody's going to score on us today. Or you've got that kid that just has those moves down by the goal. He's not real fast, but he's really quick with the disc, and he's got those deceptive moves, and then you think he's going to score, and then he passes off. He's got the great ability to assist someone else in their play. So like basketball, like all the team games that we talked about, including polo, swim has those to offer and really breaks free and just allows so much more communication, and the kids really take ownership, and the coach a lot of times can just kind of step back and allow the kids to take ownership of the game, take ownership of the practice. And that's what I really enjoy at our practices, is our kids, even down into the young ages, you know, when you first start a swim program at a pool, it's a little bit more work. There's more equipment. There's more to get done. I mean, there's just a ton to do, but at the same time, within a practice or two, the kids are setting the system up, and the kids are taking the system down, and the kids are putting the lane lines back in for me. And so we're teaching them to play interactive play, but we're also teaching them to work and to work as a team. And I brought up polo a lot because there's so much similar to polo in that regard, except for the key here is this game of swim and how it's been presented has, and this is what's really unique about it. It has the element to even rise above and be faster and more exciting and more of an elite level, I think, than polo. But at the same time, start at a much, much lower level, age 4, 5, 6, whenever the child has enough attention span to be a team player and to cooperate. And cooperation is something that's learned as well. So, you know, some of the kids have it at 4 or 5. They're already cooperating. They're engaged in the game. And other kids, that might be 7 or 8 or 9. It just depends on their learning growth and how much cooperation and team play and socialization that they've had in the very elementary years, 2, 3, and 4. So swim is really designed because of the swim fins, that it invites more kids and more, even at the adult or the teenage level, it invites more of the population into the water. The other aspect is the game is just as much fun in shallow water as it is. It's a different game, but it's just as much fun in shallow 3 feet of water as it is in 10 feet of water. So, or in a variable depth game. In fact, a community game is most often and works out great in a variable depth pool where you, if you've got people in the game that aren't such good swimmers yet, they can swim when they want to swim. And then you've got other people in the water that are quite accomplished and they're going to spend most of their time in the deep water just because they know they're going to get a better workout and they can enjoy their swimming skills. So the game just allows, because it has such a flexibility for the whole community with regard to who can participate and at what level and at what age they can participate, it just opens up that much more communication possibilities and possibilities to evolve the sport. So I think you and I are going to be so surprised in the coming years, Mark, and even into our old age, where the sport has grown even from what we envision it as of right now, just because the sport has so much flexibility to it and adaptability for different ages, different needs, and such the ability to contribute in such different ways. And we haven't even spoken of our, you know, of the SQIM certification and how it ties to life-saving and water safety. So, and that's just another component of that communication and socialization and allowing the kids to really take ownership. The kids, as they mature and get older into their early middle school years or teen years, really take ownership of the whole program.
In water polo, it's very evident as to the personality of the player, you know, in the talents and the abilities and their roles within the team. You know, there are some people that are just cut out to be a goalie, you know, and there are some people that are cut out to be a hole defender or another kid, you know, as a wing. And the kids get to show themselves out. And likewise, even when we play with our younger camper kids, you know, there's kids surprise you, you know, and, oh, boy, you better watch that person, you know, and it's your little sneaky devil is going to, you know, steal that from you or you know, be able to show, you know, they scored three goals in a row now. You better make some, you know, a combination. So I definitely love to see the personalities of the kids come out. And they don't know themselves going into the game what their role will be, but then they all sort of embrace it and, you know, get very interactive with one another, and then we can build on that day to day with the kids. So, yeah, I definitely like this point here about the middle adolescence ages, and, you know, I think SQIM, you know, can really find a groove there. However, it's likewise, you know, good for younger to older. But, you know, SQIM can, and going back to the article in Wayne's words, build a flexible, empathetic swimming program tailored to adapt to the changing needs of your swimmers. And bang, you know, that's a home run for you know, for the article and for what SQIM can do. It can be flexible and accommodating.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree because of the gear of the game. The implement, the disc itself is half the weight of a water polo ball. It's much softer. It's the grip on it is not this big palm grip where you've got to have a large hand to kind of hold the ball, but even a 3- and 4-year-old can pass the disc successfully on the water. So it's got a nice soft but real secure small grip ability of someone's hands at any age. That, and again, you know, heading back to the swim fins, you know, the fins are available in what, 8, 9 sizes and all the way from about age 4 and 5, all the way up through a 6'3", 6'4" guy. And so that allows a lot of flexibility when you think about it, not only for people of different swimming abilities and ages, but of specific special needs.